Welcome to episode 79 of the Vancouver Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Drew O'Grizzick.
Samantha Ming, thanks for joining us with our weekly update of the events around town via the Events Podcast. Thanks for joining us, Samantha.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me on the show.
Tell us a little bit about the upcoming week of events. What are the what are Samantha's picks of the week?
Well, Drew, we have a very exciting week of tech events coming up. Let's start the week with Monday. Drew, I know you don't have this problem, but because you're a good networker, but for a lot of people, networking is tough. So for those who want to get better at networking, there's a networking tips with career experts from Hootsuite and Hyperwallet. That's at 5 o'clock at the BC Tech Innovation Hub. On Tuesday, we have the future of work. It's going to be a discussion on topics such as how is automation going to affect jobs? It will also talk about new organization models such as Holacracy. So you're interested in that. It's happening at 6:30 at the Creative Coworkers Coworking Space. We have a bunch of events happening on Wednesday at 5 o'clock. We have Meet Local Tech Companies at Talent Day happening at the BC Tech Innovation Hub. So if you're looking in the job market right now, it's going to be a great opportunity to network with companies such as Hootsuite, ElasticPath, and other top-notch companies. And at 6 o'clock, there are 3 events in Gastown you can choose to attend. Lighthouse Labs is opening up their space for a Tech Starters Code Night. There will be mentors for you to ask questions and help you debugging. The second event we have is Cloud Spanner Tech Talk. Cloud Spanner is a relational database service offered by Google. So if you're interested in learning more about that topic, make sure you attend. That's at 6 o'clock at the 7Gate Venture Labs. And another event that's happening that day is Spring Startup Showcase event. There's going to be a bunch of Spring alumni demoing and pitching their new business, and that's at Cocor. On Thursday at 6 p.m., we have an intro to search engine marketing with Google AdWords that's happening at The Hive in Gastown. Now, this is a paid workshop, so you will need to register to attend. And for those hardcore event goers, we have 2 events on Saturday. At 9 a.m., we have a 2-hour workshop on sketching in VR using Web VR and A-Frame. This is happening at Red Academy on Broadway. But if this is a tad early for you guys, you can attend the marketing workshop at 10 in the morning. It's a 4-hour intensive workshop happening at Spring.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Samantha. Make sure to put a link down below to the events podcast so our listeners can take a deeper dive into those events.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And we're here with special guest today, Zach Cohen, GM of Trulyu. Thanks for joining us, Zach.
Hey, pleasure to be here, Drew. Thanks.
Awesome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? We discovered in some pre-interview talk that we're both from North Van. North Van represent, yo.
Yeah, born and raised the shore. That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So grew up in North Van. Tell us a little bit about your career, your trajectory, and what brought you to Trulyu.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, I'm like a long, long story short. After school, I worked for the government, actually, out in Ottawa. And that was, it's a great, great place. It just really wasn't for me.
Right.
And so after that, I did
a Ottawa or government or
yeah,
both?
Ottawa, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was out in the East Coast for a little while for graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And then was in Ottawa for a year working for the Privy Council office.
So I've heard some people actually skate in on the river into work during
you
the could. Winter.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely can. It gets cold enough. Yeah. So it's a little bit different than this side.
Yeah, yeah.
You absolutely could. But after that, I was so cold, I moved down actually internationally down to Central America for several years. Did a few of my own businesses down there, actually. And then in the end, I came back and started to get into compliance software in Vancouver.
Oh, very cool. So before we hop into the compliance software, which does sound fun, tell us a bit about South America. Seems like a big move to say, did you initially plan to move to South America for a few years?
No, you know what? Actually, I'd just been in school for a long, long time. And I had a friend that was down there and begging me and asking me to come visit him. And I did, fell in love, and just did anything I could to stay. I think it was one of those entrepreneurial environments. You know, it's sort of, you got to make something work. And so you do everything you can, you brainstorm, and you try and create an idea and make it happen. And that's what I did. The first one failed miserably, and the second one went okay. But after, you know, I was out there back and forth about 4.5, 5 years. And so at the end of it, it was time to come back home. And that's when I hooked up with a few software companies in Vancouver. And by then, you know, the software industry here was actually growing quite quickly. Lots of cool companies. And that's where I got in.
So what you'd gone to, Ottawa, you were working for government. What sort of roles did you have? And then South America, I guess startups, but what sort of roles as well?
Yeah. So, in government, based on, you know, what I studied, it was more political economics. So I was an economic analyst, you know, working on, you know, the federalism aspect, a bunch of different issues. The PCO is actually a pretty cool brain, center for the whole government. So, the interesting thing there was if it's on the news the night before, you're working on it the next day. So there was definitely, I was
kind of have that preview.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then, yeah, and when I started the own businesses, it was me and a few other people. So you're doing everything. You know how it is. You wear a bunch of hats. Mm-hmm. Whatever gaps need to get filled, you do. So I was a lot in the business operations, the day-to-day, sales, marketing, people management, you know, everything in between.
Now, was that quite different? Which countries in South America? Was that quite different in South America from what it might have been up in Canada?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. So it's actually, I'm technically Central America. So I was in Panama. Yeah, it's totally different. It's very different culturally, you know, just everything from starting a business, from the people, and just from the ideas, from idea creation to rolling it out. It's just a much less, I think, formalized environment. So, you know, from a cultural perspective, they always say, hey, you need to know where you're working and you need to understand the environment you're in. Well, that was a lesson that I didn't heed until a little bit later. And so you make those mistakes. And so, yeah, absolutely. If you were to start a company here today in Vancouver versus there, obviously there are a lot more, you know, strict steps you can follow from idea creation, everything from funding to setting up a corporation to hiring to launch. But, you know, I think today with the digital age, those things are converging, you know.
A lot of things have changed in a very short amount of time. And just like you said, a lot of those things are converging. I think it was not too long ago where different cultures thought, operated, even dressed quite differently, mm-hmm. whereas today, it's still, you still have that, of course, but we have much more convergence. Yeah. I think internet and smartphone media.
Yeah. I mean, Drew, like, I think it comes down to the fact that we don't have, like, your customer base now is global, mm-hmm. right? When you launch a product or a software, you're not just, I mean, you are sometimes looking at your domestic market for launch, let's say.
Right.
But very quickly, you have in mind international exposure. And because you can access that customer base, you can access those markets so much easier now. You typically have that planning in mind. So yeah, totally different now.
So that's actually you bring up a really interesting point that I often think about. I spent some time living in Asia, particularly Japan and South Korea.
Cool.
And I'll be going, in a couple of weeks. I'm going for 3 weeks to, 2 weeks in South Korea, in Seoul, and 1 week in, Tokyo, Japan. And I'll be working out of co-working spaces, which wasn't really a thing, you know, 10 years ago. It may have been, I don't know, I just didn't know about it.
Right.
But now it seems like that's everywhere. And the startup landscape, I'm really interested in to see what it's like there. Mm-hmm. Google, as an example, I think, was, I don't know what it's like now, but in 2011, when I was there, it was irrelevant in South Korea. You know, and why? Well, because when search engines kind of went through their thing, it was like, I think we had all sorts of different search engines, but MSN was kind of the dominant one before Google really took the lead. And then every other search engine out there
just
kind of died.
Ask Jeeves was always
Yeah, nice. Nice. One of the reasons why they didn't have a strong foothold in South Korea was because their content wasn't location-based. Mm. And there were Korean content providers that came up, like the largest search engine at the time, Naver in Korea, was localized. It started out as a content provider and then became a search engine because everyone was going to them. And so when you say, you know, sometimes your product might be for that region and sometimes it might not, sometimes the strength of the product is being regional. As opposed to being international, but sometimes it makes more sense to be international. So I'm really interested in maybe what sorts of questions and what sorts of people I should be looking at and maybe interviewing when I go to these co-working spaces in in Seoul or in Tokyo.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super cool thing to talk about. And, you know, it's funny. I was reading a big article on WeChat yesterday and how, I mean, it's just a monster, really idea. And it's a platform, you know, that it really is. And I was looking it through and I was thinking, you know, why isn't this taken off in the same way in North America, you know, WeChat or something similar? But it's funny, you know, you look at the UIs, one versus the other, and it's like, this would never work for people in North America. It's just too, it looks too crowded and convoluted, but it's super powerful. So it really is. I mean, yes, most products nowadays have internet, I think global in mind, but you obviously have to cater to the customer and where they are and how their user experience would change, you know, your type of interface.
It's a really interesting thing that you mentioned, you know, it's too crowded. I think when you go to a very large city, somewhere like Seoul, for example, you could take 10 minutes looking at the same building trying to find a single sign on it because there's just so many, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess sometimes that UI, or always, often that UI really reflects the culture that it's intended for. But yeah, so that sounds pretty interesting. So different, you know, South America versus Canada, you came back up and got into the tech sort of startup space.
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked for a couple different startups. I think the one before TrueU was a little bit more mature, had been around for several years, had a strong customer base. But funnily enough, we're both in this compliance technology space that now, you know, there's that reg tech, fintech branding associated with it. But that's really where both of these businesses are. And, you know, to tie it in with the global nature, TrueU today, I mean, that's really the focus as well, is trying to make these things easier, right? Trying to solve a specific problem, but on a global arena as opposed to regionalized.
Okay. So tell us a little more about TrueU. What is TrueU?
Yeah, absolutely. So TrueU is an identity verification platform. And essentially what that means, I mean, our ultimate goal is building a trust layer on the internet. So I think today there's a variety of use cases, really for consumers, for businesses, for regulators, all different types of, you know, entities, so to speak, that have challenges around verifying individuals who want to access mobile services or online services in general. Mm-hmm. And so there's a ton of challenges around there, not only for individuals who want that access, but for businesses who have to, A, adhere to regulatory obligations when they're onboarding individuals, but also just businesses who want to make sure that their user base is legitimate. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to mitigate against fraud and things
like that. So what does verification actually mean?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, so it's changing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why TrueU is such a cool business and why it has such a cool vision. You know, it starts a lot today. The more traditional route is data verification. Essentially, you're taking data attributes and matching them against trusted, reliable sources all around the world. But now we're seeing different advances and changes and innovations in that space around things like verifying documents or taking selfies and matching that against, you know, information, you know, doing different biometrics. Mobile information is a really powerful source now for developing economies. So it is evolving as all technology does, but also as individuals do. And you know, the type of information that someone has in Canada, for example, is very different than someone in India or someone in Korea, for example. Mm-hmm. So, but in general, right, we're all about building that trust layer of identity online.
So I found that when I was in South Korea, almost every site that you wanted to register for, you had to have a government issued ID number, and foreigners had a different number sequence, and so you couldn't usually sign up. So you'd have to do some different type of registration, which would often take weeks, or have somebody else just sign up for you with their card, but then you were under them, and so there was always that. Is that a reasonable way of verification?
You know what? It's interesting you bring that up, because that's where this idea spawned from, frankly. So the founder, so there's truly has two founders, and one of them was having that exact problem. Mm-hmm. They were trying to make a purchase in Southeast Asia and couldn't get identified. And it's a huge use case of people who have credit histories, bank accounts, known institutions in their home country, and then they skip over, you know, 20 kilometers across the border, and all of a sudden you're nobody.
Right.
So yeah, absolutely. So I think that's one of the big challenges and one of the big problems, both cross border as well as individuals who come from economies who don't necessarily have the same rigidity in terms of documenting their citizens locally. So absolutely, it's a huge issue, and you know, currently our platform covers 4 billion people.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. So I thought that was really interesting. I read that, and then I kind of did a look up to see, you know, what percentage of the population's actually online or have access to the internet, which, according to some site that I found, was just slightly under 4 billion.
Yeah.
So then I wondered, you know, what does that 4 billion mean? And I mean, if you round it, obviously it would be 4 billion. Is that everybody on the internet?
Well, no. So it doesn't mean everybody on the internet. It means if you wanted to access a service on the internet. Mm-hmm. So let's say you wanted to go, if you're in a developing market and you want to sell something, maybe mm-hmm. you're a manufacturer and you want to trade or sell. How would a solution that enables that transfer, that commerce, identify you as an individual? So when we talk about 4 billion individuals covered, that's the data that we hold. So you can make it accessible to that many individuals.
Very cool.
So we got to 4 billion, and you know, it's really that last mile that's going to be the most challenging, because those are the individuals that are just harder to reach. And so,
well, someone was telling me, I think a very interesting thing, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's been really behind this internet.org. Yeah. And someone was mentioning how, you know, Facebook, in order for them to increase their revenue, they need to literally get more people online who aren't online. That's kind of neat. But that's somewhat, in a way, distribution of wealth.
Yeah.
And information.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing, right? So we actually think of ourselves as enablers mm-hmm. of fintech. And I guess Facebook, you know, they're not fintech, but they do have now a variety of commerce applications within their platform. So they want to be able to do, you know, marketplaces and be able to send your friend money and those types of things. And whenever that happens, now you have these additional obligations to adhere to. So as their incentives are always to gather more users on the system, Facebook or any other type of financial technology that's growing out there, they need a technology like ours to help with that onboarding step. So you know what? Everything from Facebook to startups, that's sort of the coolest thing working with Trulio, is we get exposure to all these great companies that are doing amazing things, and we get to help drive that innovation and help enable it.
So I kind of think that, you know, on the one hand, I mean, obviously security becomes very important, and then the reliability of verification. But I kind of think on the one hand, looking at, say, the Korean government, and they're looking at government-issued IDs, in is quite similar to if we were using our social insurance numbers or a DNA sequence, something that we physically can't change. And then what happens when that gets hacked? Then on the other hand, I also kind of think and feel that freedom of information and transparency also leads to safety in some ways, because if everybody knows that I'm me, then they also know that you're not me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the whole privacy struggle right now, and data protection and keeping consumer information private and protected is a huge issue. We're seeing it in Canada, but everywhere around the world. I mean, in Europe right now, it's a massive, massive changes going on right now that's trying to empower the individual to be able to control their data and tell companies how they can use their data, when they need to stop using their data, and all these different types of things. So, you know, whenever you download that new app and just check that box, you know, it's a little scary at times to think about how your information is being used. But yeah, I see the other point is, if everything's public, then there's nothing to hide anymore. But Korea is actually a pretty cool example of that too, mm-hmm. with the IDs.
Right.
And we just launched Korea actually. Just a few weeks ago. So
very cool.
We'll see how that works out.
Nice. So yeah, it also brings up some other, I guess, interesting points, which is, you know, how often does it really matter? A lot of the time you might have data out there and it's being used, but it doesn't affect you or maybe anything negatively. And it doesn't even care that you're you per se. You know, it cares about certain things about you, you know, maybe profiling or generalizations. But then there are times where it really does matter that it's you, and that might be your mortgage payments or, you know, other things like that. Although, I mean, I wouldn't mind if somebody else paid mortgage payments for me.
I'd get a way bigger place.
Right. But I guess then on the other hand, just realizing how many flaws there are with things in general, and there obviously are with software and things like that as well, there has to be some sort of, I guess, allowable variance. And I think when it comes to verification, this must be a very small amount.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that our technology, like any other, you have to have a combination of methodologies to get the whole picture of what you're trying to accomplish. So, mm-hmm. You know, just like a lot of tech where we say, hey, we're going to try this and this and this in combination to get the outcome that we want. And then we're going to continue doing these other types of things to make sure that that information doesn't change or that we don't get, you know, stuck behind the eight ball on something else. It's a very logical, common sense approach a lot of these times. So, you know, to bring it back to Trulieu lastly is that's why we're really a platform.
Right.
So we try and bundle a lot of these different types of tools up, and a lot of our roadmap is based around, hey, what other part of that customer journey or what other part of that risk threshold mm-hmm. could we answer on a global scale so that you can do just that? You know, you can solve one piece and then you can solve another piece. And as you keep adding these different layers, it becomes quite a powerful solution to make sure that no one can forge your identity, no one can take over your identity. And once you are identified, you can have access to a variety of different things without having to re-go through the process. So yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
So what would be, I don't know if there's a typical, but maybe some examples of Trulieu customers or customer profile?
Yeah, you know, there are definitely some standard use cases. I think for you and I, one that I think about quite often is, let's say you wanted to set up a new online bank account tomorrow. Right. So let's say you're going to a new online bank. When you fill out your information and try and create that account, that's a very common use case. So you don't know it, but in real time in the background, when you click submit, they're actually doing a variety of checks on you to make sure that you're approved to create that account.
So something like in Canada, we might use like Equifax or something along those lines.
Yeah, those are the data. So that's the core data that you match against. Absolutely. So a bureau is a good example. Actually, globally, credit bureaus are really good examples. Oftentimes, they're more predominant in certain economies than others because more people have a credit record. That's when you bring in other things like government data, you know, utility files, consumer records, a variety of different data sets to make sure that you get that full rounded picture, as well as get that thin file customer that might not have as much other information.
So thinking about this, it actually occurred to me that it might be more expensive technologically to develop the tech to verify people in emerging economies than in well-established economies.
It can be, yes. I guess this is what we do. Like, this is what our big passion is and what our big focus is, hey, how do we get more of those individuals into the online economy if they so choose to do so? And you're right, absolutely. We have to come up with more inventive and sophisticated ways to make sure that they can be identified. I think in emerging economies, we're seeing mobile as be very, very powerful ways to do these types of things now. Whereas in Canada, right, Equifax, there you go. It's sort of one and done, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so back to the who would care, who would want to. So building out a fintech company needs some sort of verification. Are there any sort of interesting edge cases there?
Yeah, there are, you know, there's a lot of different cases when you're trying to build trust online or a fraud use case, you know. So you try and think about any type of community you create online where it's important to you that there aren't superficial individuals or fake profiles. So I think we can think of a lot of different things in the news today, right? You know, you have fake news or you have fake comments or, you know, all these different types of environments where, hey, it's super important to make sure that the user base and the community is a legitimate one. Because otherwise it gets polluted, and the information sharing is inaccurate. So I think there's a lot of, you know, edge cases, and that's everything from, you know, a dating site to, you know, to,
I was just thinking online chat because that, I mean, really quickly got dominated by bots, and I think, ended up killing it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a perfect example.
So what about the culture of Trulieu as a place to work, as a company? How big is it? How many people are there? Yeah. Where is it headquartered? What sorts of, roles are involved?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the company's headquartered in Vancouver. We do have an office in San Francisco, but the founders are from Vancouver, and this is their fourth startup in the city, so they love it here, and we do as well. So the core of our employees are in Vancouver. So I think we're total now around 45 people, which is we've grown quite a bit in the last year. So I spent a lot of my time these days, you know, onboarding and hiring, and that's which is very exciting. So, you know, you asked me about culture, and it's changing. It changes. You know, when you go from 0 to 10 people and 10 to 20 and 20 to 50 and 50 to 100, there's always changes in the types of people that want to be involved at those stages, as well as the type of environment you try and create.
What are some of the changes that you're seeing now?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the big thing is in early stage companies, it's very often dominated by development teams, right? Because there's so much of that upfront work to get the technology off the ground, and you really want to focus there, because if you don't have that proof of concept and that product and that feature set, who cares if you have 20 salespeople pushing them? So, you know, right now, I think we're seeing a big balance now between sales, marketing, data, customer support, all those different types of, you know, business development roles, as well as product and development people. And of course, being in our industry, you have compliance and legal gets heavy too.
Right.
Yeah. But the culture is very cool. I mean, I think of us, and we try and attract people that are really player coaches. People that like to get work done, that love the startup vibe, that like wearing a lot of different hats and really want to work and get things out of the park. But also like to raise the whole ship overall. So, you know, we like to keep a very collaborative, but hardworking environment.
How do teams work? Do you have teams?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's pretty standard. You know, we have our tech team, our product teams. We have a sort of a customer success team that's an amalgamation of account management, customer support, like technical support, as well as data science. You know, we have a compliance team that's probably a little bit different than other software companies.
Right.
And a pretty, you know, a legal team in that sort of area as well.
What about hiring needs? Are you looking at hiring people going forward?
Yeah. So we did a lot of hiring this year, and we have a couple more to go before the end of our fiscal year end. And then I think we're going to sit down as a management team in the next couple months and make the next game plan for moving forward. But it's been a lot of good growth for the business, and we're really focused now on driving new customer revenue, and we have quite an aggressive product roadmap. So in the last fiscal quarter of that to get everything done.
What are some of the problems that you see Trulioo solving over the next year or so?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, because sometimes the problems even change. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think our core root problem is making sure that our customers can onboard their customers in an efficient, seamless, frictionless, and fast way, with that confidence that you can trust the users on the platform. And so some of the challenges that are coming down the road just enable, okay, well, now we've verified consumers. What about this type of consumer versus maybe a more mature type of consumer? What about businesses? What about, I want to understand more about their social profiles? What about all these different types of areas? So it really becomes a data map and different data points where you want to start relating all of these items together to get a more complex and sophisticated view of your user base.
So if people want to know or find out more about Trulioo, what are some good ways that they can do that? And also, if they want to talk to people from there, are there meetups that maybe the tech team would regularly be at, or you would regularly be at, or product people would be at?
Yeah, so if you want to find out, it's just at Trulioo. You know, well, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, the website, whatever you want. So it's Trulioo. And you know, meetups, we don't have any regular meetups that we're always at, so to speak. But we're at a lot of different events in the community. And frankly, if you can handle the two flights of stairs, you should just come and knock on the door and say hi.
Whereabouts is the office?
Heart of Grasstown. Yeah, right on Hastings and Richard.
All right. Well, Zach Cohen, GM of Trulioo, thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Hey, Drew, appreciate it much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.